Just a quick warning, this podcast series contains discussions about crime, trauma, sexual abuse, drug use, and suicide. Listener discretion is advised. On today's podcast, we've got legendary boxer Jeff Fenwick and legendary trainer Johnny Lewis. Welcome to the Stick Up, guys.
Pleasure being here as always, mate. Good to see you.
Yes, Russell, yeah, once again, nice to talk to you.
I've started a series, and I'm going to call it Heroes, and it's people that have an impact on people's lives, and Jeff, you'd be able to articulate it better than any. What impact has Johnny Lewis had on your life?
Oh, the easiest way to say it, I wouldn't be here if I didn't meet Johnny. I definitely can't tell you where I would be, because
I reckon you would have done jail, Boys Home. You would have done, you were on that trajectory, weren't you?
I did Boys Home when I was young. Yeah, of course. And like I said, there are certain things, and watching me get beat up for the first time changed my life.
I've interviewed a few people in particular. Garth Wood articulates it really well, of going to sitting at the gym at Newtown, sitting on the side of the ring watching you and Johnny work together, and he said that changed his life. This carry-on over of what you guys have done together.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, because some of the footy players that used to work with us and train with us, they still have the most amazing memories of, first of the respect that I have for this man to my right. And yeah, of course I respected my mum and dad and I loved my family, but I don't know, this was something that was completely different to me. I fell in love with this guy, and to this day I can never thank anybody enough for the person I am and the person I am today, Russ. I'm really proud of myself. I love myself very much. I don't mean I love myself being bigger, but I love what I do for people. I love what I give back to people, and it all stems from Johnny.
What makes Johnny Lewis so special?
There are certain people that can have impacts on people in different ways. When I think of people, I always think of the great Wayne Bennett, how he could have all those rugby league players and have their total respect, and they just kept winning and they won for him. My first action after every fight was just to look at Johnny, especially when I won, because I wanted him to know that what I'd just done, I'd done it for him, and without him I couldn't have done it. And if he never set me all those little goals when I was growing up, and he never set me a goal that was unachievable. He set me these goals that he knew that I could achieve one step at a time. And yeah, he's taught me so much, because today I use his brain through what he taught me, trying to look after the fighters that I have, and I try to be as similar to him as I can. But again, today the world's changed, and where he and I could go down the road and have a stout and coke, and when he'd take me down to the Erskineville Hotel and those kind of things, we don't have the freedom to do things like that today. But look, like I said, all the things that he taught me I use at the top of my list. I have the respect of all my fighters, and the reason why I have that respect is because I try to be as great to them, not just as boxing trainers, but as a father figure, as somebody that's going to help them, somebody's going to give them advice in all other aspects of life. And Johnny, was never just about boxing with Johnny. It was always about me being a better person, doing the right thing, loving my family, doing all that stuff. And, can't thank him enough.
What did you see, Johnny, when Jeff Fenwick first walked into the gym? What did you see? And what did you see him at his potential? What did you see in him?
Look, my memory's not really good at the moment, but I think of that first day so many times, and I've got it down to a fine art. Had a young kid in the ring that was a New South Wales champion, Australian champion, fighting to go to the Olympics.
On Mount Druitt.
And,
Mark.
And anyhow, we were going through the punches, and I saw this little kid come through and sit on the seat and just looking, and I happened to say to him, mate, we need to get some sparring. And before I could say anything else, this kid said, I'll spar him. And I looked down, there's a little skinny kid just sitting down, and I said, oh, all right, mate, but we don't do things like that. And I remember I said to him, mate, if you want to do some training, come up tomorrow night. And I think it was 5 o'clock or whatever. And I got there early, and an hour early, and here was this kid sitting out the front of the Newtown Police Boys Club, as it was in them days, ready to go. And when I went upstairs, that's what Kiwi is, early, ready to go. And it was impossible what he did in such a short time. I don't think anyone in the world could emulate what Jeff did. And there's a thing that Jack Gibson used to say, you only take out what you put in. And that's why Jeff took out a lot. No one could compete with him in that. Like he was mentally tough, he was physically tough. And there's a couple of stories that I remember. I think it was our first fight together, and Jeff was absolutely brilliant for what he...
What was that? Let's talk about that first fight from both. How was it for you, coming into your first fight? Here it is, you got this amazing man in your corner. Man, what was going through your head with that first fight, Jeff?
Well, the funny thing was nobody knew he was an amazing man. Oh. I did, but nobody else. Yeah.
You really highlighted it. Your career really highlighted.
Yeah, we started together, and it was like this crazy ride. And I'll never forget my first amateur fight. As nervous I was, prior to the first fight, I had a fight out in the street prior to it because somebody said something to my boy's mother, and I ended up having a big fight in the street before I had my fight. And I fought a couple of guys who were much more experienced than me, and I was doing good. And I'm going to just jump at them because I'll never forget. Johnny went away once, and I lost my first amateur fight, and he wasn't in my corner. And he said to me that I wouldn't have let you fight that guy. Remember who it was, Johnny? Joey Glover.
Joey Glover, yeah.
He was a really talented
Tommy
kid.
Tommy was in your corner.
Yeah, but I fought him again and beat him straight after when Johnny was home. But like I said.
Do you think when you went back and fought him, was the confidence that Johnny brought to your corner that was the definitive factor?
But I always believed that I could beat anybody. I thought, that's what happens when you, when... You're somebody like me. Like I said, I always worked hard, and I thought I always worked harder than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I tried to prove that every time I went for a run, and the boys would stay with me. As soon as I would just flick the switch, I'd leave them a kilometre. And so I always. I think the thing was, I don't know. When I watch myself as an amateur after 12 or 13 fights, and I don't really believe, I can't believe what I'd done, because although I was competitive against everybody, I didn't have the skill level because I'd never done it before. And I honestly believe this, and Johnny will say this, I was born to do what I end up doing. And I found it by accident. I found it at a late age. And like I said, just think of 12, 13 fights. I'm fighting in the World Cup in Rome against guys who had hundreds of fights. Mm. I came third in the world. I traveled the world. And although I lost a lot of my international fights, because I only had 13 and 14, 15 fights fighting guys who had hundreds of fights.
Yeah.
I was always competitive, and Johnny just kept saying to me, just stick at it. I'll never forget that he wrote me a letter. He wrote me a beautiful letter when my father passed, but he also wrote me a letter when he went away with Jeff Malcolm to Honolulu, and he left me just before I was going to the World Cup, and our friend Alan Bull Parker, trained me while Johnny was away. But he wrote me a little letter, and he just said to me, Jeff, just go, enjoy, and do the best you can. Just be who you are as you always are. Just go and give it your best. And he said, by 1985, you'll see all the benefits. And I didn't know I was going to be amateur, but in 1985, I won the world title. And it was just that he wrote me this letter. And that, like I said, I don't know if Johnny could see the future, or just between us, we had this amazing thing that just clicked. And
it's iconic. It's like what you guys have got is iconic. Like you, Matt, you talk about coach.
But right, it's like Johnny said, if you think, like I said, if you go back through the history of any sport, think of anybody. So I started boxing at 17 and a half.
That's a late start for boxing.
Jersey Flegg, when I was SG Ball, Jersey Flegg, I played Matthew Shield. So I want to be a football player. But just think, from 17 and a half, 19, I went to Olympics. 20, I was world champion. 23, I was three-time world champion.
I'll never get replicated.
In any sport, and people, it's crazy. But like I said, I just believe that I was born to do it. And the only thing that I was missing was Johnny Lewis, and that was it. He gave me the discipline. He set me those goals, and everything else just fell into place.
Tell me what it's like walking back. I'll get it from both your perspective. What's it like? So you're walking back in your corner. John's in the corner, and what confidence? How does it feel knowing that he's there?
The great thing was he never really had to say too much to me because I was beating everybody. And the great thing was every time I'd walk back, I knew that I was doing him proud, so have a drink, son, you're doing great, and it was never, Jeff, this has happened, that's happened. We always had this, like I said, it was just an amazing feeling for me to sit down. And Russ, I'll say it again, of course, I'm going to give myself a bit of pat on the back, but go through all my fights. I fought a guy named Daniel Zaragoza.
Carlos Zarate.
Wait, forget that, but yeah. Daniel Zaragoza went 10 rounds with Morales and one judge had him winning when he was 38. I fought him when he was in his 20s and he never won a portion of a round against me. So look at all my things. See how many rounds I lost. Not
and
many.
You were a massive underdog.
Yeah, of course. But we never even lost rounds. I was winning world title fights, 13 rounds to zip and 12 rounds to zip, fighting guys like Jerome Coffey, was 26-0, one of the best amateurs in the world and one of the best pros at the time. But like I said, I don't know. It was just, I just think that, first of all, like I said, I was born to fight.
Without a doubt.
I was just blessed to have found that person that could keep me level-headed and, yeah, I shouldn't even say that because there were times where I had a bigger head than anybody else too. But no, I just wanted to keep doing the right thing for him. And that's Johnny. That, like I said, that's the person Johnny is. He's the kind of person that if a car was run, I'd push him out of the road and jump in front of it any day of the week.
Yeah, and everyone that has contact with him would say the same. Anyone, like people I've come across, everyone has this.
You know, saying and doing it's a different thing. But
I know. I agree, brother.
I tell you, Russell, there's one thing in Jeff's amateur career, and I'll jump what I'm going to talk about because it was not so much longer after that Jeff's hands were really sore, and he's still an amateur boxer. It was the highlight of my life when we went down to Melbourne, and unfortunately I wasn't allowed in his corner, but
as an amateur, he's
they picked their own trainer for the state.
He had three fights. But these three guys were really good. It was the best division we had that was going to get whoever won it was going to be the best.
Well, one of the guys that I fought at Grant had just come back from the Commonwealth Games and won a bronze medal in the Commonwealth Games, and Grant Richards.
But he won every night. We had two ice buckets with his hand, both hands in. And I used to look at him and say, what a shame. He'll win this, but he can't keep on going fighting like that. And anyhow, he won the Australian title, and thus he started his trip to the Olympics. But one of his early fights, there was this particular trainer, and he had a young bloke, and he was going really good, really good. Anyhow, it just typified. He just said to me, you sure you want to fight my guy? And I said, yeah, we'll do it. Jeff would have had about four fights at the most. And he was a good fighter, this kid. But anyhow, we fought him, and Jeff absolutely, mate, I bashed him from the first round to the third. He mightn't remember this, but the bloke come up to me and he said, your bloke, he can't fight. And I said, no, you're right, but your bloke can, and we just beat him. So just imagine, what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah.
And look, I can tell you things how stupid he was to destroy himself to make the weight. It was impossible, but he did it.
What was your fluctuation, Jeff, on average?
Before I fought Stephen McCrory and I broke my hand in training, the story is that Bill Morty said that we'd cancel the fight, so we agreed that we're going to postpone the fight. He rings, the next morning I had my alarm off, but I thought my alarm went off was that the phone. Bill Morty rang me and said, Jeff, I need to fight. If you're not going to fight, I'm going to be bankrupt, I'm broke. So, Bill, I'll fight, but I went out again last night, I ate and I've put on another 10 pounds in one night, which quite easy for me back then. Anyways, they said I could fight, just try to make the best I could on the scales, and we'd relinquish the title, but I could have the fight. So they put me and Johnny and a few of us on a hill farm. Johnny and them would sneak out in the middle of the night and get McDonald's. Now I could always see McDonald's boxes. I'd gone for a run in the morning and pizza boxes. But couple of days prior, I'd gone back home and I was still like 6 or 7 pounds overweight. And at the time, Peter Matreski was staying with me and running me every day. The morning of the fight, I woke up, I was still about 4 or 5 pounds over, and I thought, do I want to lose? So I went for a run, 5K. The day of the fight, we weigh in. That's not the day before. Weighing was just after lunch. I ran 5K four times. I ran 20 kilometres the morning that I fought Stephen McCrory, 20 kilometres. I finally made weight. I was dehydrated. My mum looked at me. She was crying. Johnny looked at me, thought I was going to die. But I still made weight that day and still fought with 8 hours rehydration. Like today, we've got 34 hours. And I end up stopping Steve McCrory. So I don't know. I just had this crazy mentality that I didn't want to give my title away, and I just didn't want to let nobody down.
We sit here in Erskineville. Erskineville has played a big part in your lives. It's known for breeding tough people. Tough people come from Erskineville and Newtown, this area. Do you think, how did this area play a part in who you are today? I know Johnny's really proud of Erko bloke.
It's simple. You look at, forget just the rugby league players, but you look at the people that Johnny grew up around, the Terry Bongs and all those guys.
Yeah.
They were hard men and they were loyal men. They had a set of ethics that if their best friend broke them, they were no longer their best friend. You know, I grew up around that and grew up around listening to Johnny's friends talk, Loopy and all his great old friends. And it was not just an honor, but it was a lesson in life. It was something that,
you got the best of both worlds.
I live by today. I still live by all the morals and the things that I live by that today. That's why, like I said, that's why I'm proud of who I am today. Because I'm still that. You know,
you're still that player.
And like I said, anybody that says they stay the same when they become rich and famous, bullshit. Because fame or fortune changes everybody. Changes automatically, and that happened to me. But to this now, I think of that all the time. I try to find that old person that I was, and I've found him. I'm really happy in my life. As everybody knows, just received my fourth world title.
Yeah.
And as exciting as it was, Russ, if I would have got it back then, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be married. I wouldn't have the family I've got.
Yeah.
So everything happens for a reason. Yeah, the greatest thing that happened to me in my boxing career was the draw with Azuma Nelson, because I wouldn't have my beautiful wife, wouldn't have my beautiful children. I wouldn't have the mindset. I would have been in America being a dickhead, and who knows what else would have happened. But like I said, everything happens for a reason. Like I said, the day that I walked in PCYC, I met Johnny, my draw with Azuma Nelson, my first loss, which mostly made me the man I am today, because I'd never lost before, and you learn so much. The adversity teaches you a lot, and losing taught me more than anything I ever taught me when I won. Losing let me really know who I was and who was around me, and
sometimes what seems at the time a curse can be a blessing. I tell you, I got pinched for robbing a bank up in Queensland. Four super citizens tackle me. I thought that, and one's given me a couple of punches in the head, and he said, I just saved your life. It was the biggest blessing of my life today, because I am here today. I've got a successful business. I've got this, obviously got the podcast, and I get it, Jeff. I really relate to exactly what you said, and that's a really good message to anyone that's going through a hard time at the moment. You're most probably sitting in a blessing.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, Russ, 2.5 years or 3 years, had I went to bed that night, I'm dead. If I fall asleep, I'm dead, but for some reason,
happened there, Jeff?
My father died at 57 from exactly the disease. I had my dad had heart problems, but my dad had plastic valves from in his early 20s. And like I said, I was just feeling sick while I was overseas, and feeling really weak and tired and lethargic. And of course, I'd never let nobody. I never complained. Me being that idiot that I was, and not tell anybody how bad I really felt, and went to. I went to bed that night. The boys all went to dinner, and because I didn't go to dinner, they were thinking I didn't look well. And they said one of the boys said Jeff looked a real bad colour. So I know one of them stole my room key, one of my room keys, and brought the ambulance to my room. And the rest is history. Had the ambulance not come and done emergency surgery to replace my valve, I wouldn't be here today. So like I said, it's crazy. The world's crazy.
Universal, hey? It's that universe stuff that looks after you, looks out for you.
Like I said, I'm this guy who just believes in working hard. You'll get your results and stuff, but there's more to the world than that. For maybe only the good die young, I don't know, but for me to still be here and to be having the most amazing time of my life, because when I was in my 40s, I'll never forget, even when I was in my 20s, I'd speak to Mike Tyson and we'd say, man, if we lived to 40, how good's that going to be? I'm going to be 60 next year I don't feel any different today to I felt when I was 20. I might look it, but my mental state's exactly the same. I want to enjoy my life, and I got the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I'm sitting with the person that gave me the opportunity to have what I've got, and to be sitting here with Johnny and doing this podcast makes me feel totally blessed.
Yeah, wow, that's powerful. John, I just want to touch on something. Jeff just talked about something then about hiding things, hiding his pain. How good was he at hiding his pain? Through the hands and man, because this bloke,
my sternum was broken in half, and I still trained and sparred. Mm. My sternum was in half.
Yeah,
and I don't mean a crack, totally snapped, and I sparred for days and just tried.
And John didn't know.
I was in pain. I couldn't. When I'd go home, I couldn't. If I didn't sleep, I couldn't get sleep in the bed because I couldn't get out of the bed or in the bed. But of course, he knew I was I was injured, but we didn't know the extent.
Wow. He certainly earned what he got because he suffered. And as I said, I had a young fighter just recently who, King of the Castle in the new era of boxing and everything. Being a good amateur, and he turned a pro, and during one of the sessions I had with him, he was very fast, but he wouldn't din a sayo, but he was fast and could have, in my opinion, done all right. But Jason Lang, who was with me in the gym, he said to Jason, he's trying to turn me into Jeff Fenwick. And then Jason told me, and I went in, he was getting changed. I said, mate, don't think for 1 minute that I could ever turn you into a Jeff Fenwick.
Yeah.
And it's the truth. It's to get someone that every square that had to be ticked, he ticked them.
He's once in a lifetime, eh?
Yeah. Look, I see these big footballers, whatever. Some of them put their hands up and whatever. Mate, from 8 stone to 9 stone, he had some horrible injuries. And his hands, as I said, we go back to the first time we had a fight, his hands were sore, but he didn't complain.
That's the difference,
but, but as it went on,
Tell me, on that point, is there ever a time when you said, because his hands were atrocious, weren't they? You
know my hands were bigger than the gloves when I took them off. I used to urinate blood for days. My hands.
Was there any time when you thought, don't think Jeff, but is there ever a time you thought, mate, you've got to give it away?
I remember Jeff just spoke of the McCrory fight, and what he done was absolutely ridiculous. And I held the towel, and I knew, as much as I knew about him, that we might get a round and a half out of this. And I had that towel, and I never let it go. By the third round, I could have threw it in the bleachers. He had some great fights, but to do what he did that day, and then I think it's the last time, one of the last 15 rounds. Mate, he stopped him in the 14th round. This bloke is the bloke that a couple of years before, when he was robbed at the Olympics, he won the gold medal.
I just want to explain to to non-boxing viewers, listeners here, when Johnny talks about hanging on the towel, he can throw the towel in and he cancels the fight. The fight's over. And, man, that would have been a long time hanging on to that like that.
I knew that. It had all come back from, like, we all decided that's what we're going to do. We'll go, we'll fight. But if we win, we lose the title anyhow. If he won, he gets the title. But Jeff wasn't going to let him win the title. Simple as that.
That's a motor and a half.
And I hate regrets, but it irks me when we consistently read that we've never won a gold medal in the Olympics for boxing. And Jeff won the fight, and the first time ever and the last time ever, some panel.
The jury, overturned what is.
Took it off him. And there's no doubt Jeff would have been our first Olympic gold medalist. And that hurts me. That's always a hurt in me because I didn't dream ever that we were going to go professional and do what he did. And he was robbed of that. And it's hurting.
I can tell.
Talk about something else. You know how we're talking about earlier about Yuri Boy Association and stuff? I'm a father today, and I try to get a message out to people. When your son or your daughter says, listen, I'm going to Joe's house or Jack's house or Johnny's house, go down and check up on her every now and then, see how many times they're there, and find out who your children are with. What's the family? Like I said, I look at my life today, I'm blessed to be around some amazing people that are successful in business and that, but that don't need nothing. They just, yeah, you sit down and have dinner with and you have a great time. Like I said, I go out to dinner every single night of the week with amazing people. I can mention more, but like I said, they know they're listening. And I just think if you want to be a good mother or father, and I'm sure everybody does, go down and check up who your son and daughter are mixing with and find out about the family that they're there with. Because like I said, I'm blessed. Every single day, 365 days of the year since I was maybe 11 or 12 till when I met Johnny, I sat at a pool hall, snooker hall at Emerald, Emerald Road there. Yeah. And my friends, we'd go out, we'd get in trouble, we'd steal things and that. But then with their money, I'd use my money for other things, but with their money, they'd go and buy marijuana and they smoked every single day. Mm. Not one day in my life did, and they passed me the bong 10 million times. Mm. I didn't try it once. I didn't try it. Listen, everybody I take to visit Mike Tyson, they'll all smoke weed with him if they've never smoked before. I've never done it once. My mindset is I don't want to do what other people. And at this day, and I love it when I do my public speaking engagements, and I tell them I was able to say no. And if you're able to say no, look where I am today. Look what I've got today.
Jeff, I want to touch on something about this toughness, right? Because you are the bloke have got the best message ever for adversity. You're fine. Your hands are broken. Every time you touch them,
I hurt me more when I punch them, but it hurt me more than hurt them.
Yeah.
On a lot of occasions, let me guarantee you that.
There's this distance when you're about to throw that punch, it's going to hurt. Like, what goes through your mind to fucking go, yeah, bang, there it is. I don't give a fuck how much it hurts.
Yeah, I've been pretty blessed that I credit all that stuff to preparation. I went through it in the gym. Yeah. So even in sparring, my hands were hurt. I had needles while I was sparring. I was blessed to have a man by the name of Johnny Guttenbill and Steve Lockhart who massaged my hands and got me ready every day. Never used ice once in my life. Mm. Towards the always in heat so I could use them the next day. But like I said, I don't know, I just... Like I said, I had a couple of reasons. One, because I would never say I was hurt. And the other, I always wanted to do Johnny proud. I wanted to win. So I don't know. It was with that combination of little things, I went through the pain. Like I said, but the pain that I went through when I went home in the nights, for the first few nights, right until my hands settled down, nobody could imagine. I went to hospitals. Nobody could imagine how much pain I was in after those fights. And when I'd go out and see people, nobody could touch my hands because they were so swollen. But like I said, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I was mostly crazy or what it is. But like I said, I think I answer everybody's question when I talk about it. Everybody's got the same size heart. It's mentally that makes you capable of doing things that nobody else can do. And mentally, I think I was maybe one of the strongest, toughest guys ever.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jeff's engine, his fucking engine, Johnny. Talk about his engine. What's so special about Jeff Fenwick's engine? He's like, your work rate was like phenomenal.
I said it earlier, the more you put in, the more you take out. And Jeff, you go on a run, and I used to say to him,
it was always in front. Every time I seen anything, Jeff was at the front.
We were doing fine. We weren't going to get any fitter. And he said to me, I'll run with you, which is very slow. And we ran, and then maybe a mile ahead, I saw a couple of bobbing heads. Mm. He couldn't help himself. He left me, and he had to beat them. Mm. And that's, he had to be the best, not in an awful way.
I want to bring somebody up. I was pretty blessed that a man by the name of Robert Ginman, from Urco.
Yeah.
He took over a part of my running career, and he taught me so much about breathing and relaxing and running properly. So I just thought because he's an Urco boy, and I know that at the moment Johnny's young son's taken out his middle daughter's granddaughter. So I just it's just a strange world, but Robert helped me a lot too. I could run 10K in 30 minutes, set 30 and a half minutes.
That's Olympic qualifier.
And that's with hills. I love the hills, but I I want to just say that Robert Jim and everyone going to Centennial Park and doing the Urco Hills there in the park there. So helped me so much in my
But that technique. In itself, did you ever think of a career in athletics or anything like that? 10 to even run anything under 40 for a 10K.
Mate, all I ever wanted to do was be a rugby league player. And if I could give all my belts back, I'd do it tomorrow. But
would you?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. But I was just blessed, like I said, that I met this guy here and here we are today because of him.
How much of Johnny Lewis is in you today?
You know what? I've got to be honest in front of Johnny. I love him so much, and there's a couple of things that have happened in our life later on, and everything happens for a reason, like I said, and we're here. But some of the most important things that he taught me, I feel that a little betrayed by him. And when I've spoken to him about it, and I understand about loyalty and stuff, but for me, it's either black or white. If anybody, to this day, if anybody did a thing to this guy, I'd go to jail and be dead. But I'm just saying, and like I said, and I don't want to bring names up, but some of the people who I thought were the closest people ever to me have betrayed me. And that's life. And what hurts me the most is that I still see Johnny with them and stuff, thinking that if that was Terry Ball or somebody and one of these mates done that, mate, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it because they wouldn't allow that. But then again, I do understand Johnny, because Johnny's, although he knows everybody, Johnny's got a different mentality. Johnny maybe the softest guy that wants to help everybody in life.
Yeah.
But like I said, that's just life. And like I said, again, I'm just blessed to be able to sit here, talk to you today and to talk about the man who put me here. Like I said, I doubt very much if I would have been on the earth today if it wasn't for this guy.
Yeah.
Because
I remember personally being in jail with all these really good armed robbers come from, like Johnny Hazel, Bobby Astor, Kelly.
I wasn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you weren't bad.
I was an armed robber.
But they all had stories of you, like they just said, you'd been like from Urko, he said, we'd be having a fight with some of the bigger kids, and Jeff would just turn up. He said he was always built to be a fighter like that.
Don't worry, mate, I've knocked out more bounces than most people my size, and yeah.
And there's a legendary story about you fighting was he a Canterbury front rower?
Oh, yeah.
There's all these folklore stories about Jeff.
That's not folklore, it's true. But yeah. And just recently, something happened, Russ. I won't mention it, but I'll talk to you about it later. But I had a couple of people come and visit my house and ask me a question about something in 1986, which was pretty crazy. And so I just, like I said, the world's changed. All I can say today is that everybody in life, we've gone through certain things, but I think the saddest thing is that the world's changed so much and people are trying to bring things up that happened 30 and 40 and 50 years ago. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be accountable for certain things, but before anybody's going to throw stones, just when anybody's going to throw darts, anybody, think about what you've done yourself. And that's why, Russ, I just try to be everybody's friend. I try to give back as much as I can today.
But that's Johnny.
Yeah, of course, that's what Johnny taught me. Like I said, I've no doubt I've made mistakes and done things that I regret. You can't change them, Russ. But you can make other people's lives better and give them good memories. That's what I try to do today, mate.
You do. I hear I do a post with you or anything, either one of you, and everyone sends me 100 stories of what Jeff, you have done. Johnny, let's talk about what was Jeff's toughest fight for you as a trainer?
Mate, let me first say that every fight we had was tough because we were most probably 2 years earlier to be fighting who we fought each time. It was always a big ask, but just knew that I had someone super duper.
Do you reckon that's very similar to a racehorse trainer when you just see something come through? I always look at that.
He'd beat Winks.
Yeah.
If you put them together, he'd win it. But look, he'd
break his legs first for a race.
Whatever
it takes to win.
Now, we had a fight with a Puerto Rican.
Victor Kalagis.
Great fight.
Well, you wouldn't believe when you said that. I was just obviously knowing that Johnny's memories are all there, but I was going to give you a little wink and say Victor Kalagis, but you brought up without me. Memory's not too bad. That was my toughest fight by far.
Yeah.
But what happened was he fought good boxers. He fought boxing punches. Everyone had something more than him, but he just grew with each fight. The better they were, the better he became. Every fight, he just progressed. And it was wonderful how we were able to go up each time. But Victor Kalagis, I remember, I think I was at Jeff's place and he threw an uppercut and the bloke's feet went up.
Knocked the guy right, an Italian guy, Mauricio Stecco, off the ground.
Mate, he came out, he was good. He was very good. And in the first round he hit Jeff
with a
big uppercut that he took fairly and squarely on the chin. And it had to hurt, no matter how hard he hit.
I had days where both hands just dropped beside my side. I was knocked out for a couple of seconds. Yeah. He standing up.
He made a mistake. He made two mistakes, Kalagis. One of them was that he admired his handiwork. And by the end of the round, Jeff had come back and he was as good as gold. But as the fight went on, he started to get dirtier and dirtier, headbutting elbows, and he brought a good one in, and Jeff, he'd been doing it since he was five, he put a headbutt on him, and the referee virtually said, right, they both done it, and mate, Jeff, give it to him. And the one thing, if you look at that fight, after a little bit too long he was, went stopping it because Jeff was really hurting him. And that bloke was standing up with Jeff belting him, and as soon as he stopped it, you seen Calais just collapse. Yeah. Such was his heart. He was a real champion, champion.
You broke his spirit.
I had a broken right hand, so I got injected as always, but the crazy thing was that it never lasted like... Yeah,
is that what your game plan is? You're fighting a fight like that.
The adrenaline in this fight, and it was getting the 10th round, that it pumped all the marcade out of me. So I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah,
using my left hand for a lot of the fight.
I've had a broken finger. I played rugby league with a broken finger. Fucking, and I was playing 5'8", and fucking every time the halfback would pass me, man, a broken hand punching someone in the face. That's another form of toughness.
Consistently.
Yeah. You guys were, you were always lifting the game every fight, and then you go on to fighting the great Carlos Arrade. I'd love to get a bit of a commentary on when that fight was announced, because people, he was...
Let me tell you, so he'd retired, he made a comeback, he'd won his 11 fights straight. The fight prior to him fighting me, he knocked out Richard Savage, number one guy in the world. He knocked him out in, I think, 4 or 5 rounds. And, yeah, obviously the WBC, and he's Mexican, of course, they set that fight up, obviously thinking that I was going to lose.
Mm.
Yeah, but, Johnny.
What was his – he had like 100 fights. He was 78.
70-something fights. 70.
He was like one, a Julio Chavez.
Yeah, one loss, and out of 77 fights, maybe 75 knockouts, some of that, yeah. Yeah, but different to Chavez. Chavez had won, but this guy knocked everybody out.
Yeah.
He had like a 90% knockout record. It was crazy, yeah.
They were saying at the time that Zarate was the hardest punching bantamweight of all time. Yeah. And there was another Mexican had the surname of the Z, and they fought in Zarate.
Zarate versus Zamora, yeah. Yeah.
And Zarate knocked him out. Mate, truthfully, he didn't have enough. Jeff had... He was on old legs. And,
well, one of the great things, they say old legs, he was 28 then, but now 38's old legs. But one of the great things about Carlos Arrade, when they interviewed Carlos, and I'll give you this example, I'll give you two examples. So when they interviewed Carlos Arrade, he said that Jeff Fenwick was one of the greatest fighters he ever fought and could have been a world champion in any era because he was in the 70s and stuff. Victor Kalagis, the guy that Johnny said was my toughest fight, which I agree with, and in an interview with him, he said that he went back to the corner after the fourth or fifth round, then they were asking him, how you feeling, Ronnie? And then he said to his corner, am I fighting a human? Is this guy human? These are the exact words. It's on video. Am I fighting a human? He said, I've hit this guy with punches and I've knocked everybody out, and this guy's still standing there. Am I fighting a human? You know?
How proud does that make you feel when you hear like a fighter talking about the guy that you've molded and you're trained? How does it feel when you hear that? That's the ultimate compliment.
I've got to say that for a long time I've been proud of Jeff. Sometimes there's stories I can tell that people would say there's something wrong with him. I sparred him with light heavyweights, good light heavyweights.
You had Virgil Hill at the time. Yeah, a lot of people.
Jeff Hardy, I sparred Jeff Hardy thousands of rounds.
Yeah. But
look, Jeff hit on it. He was winning these fights without losing a round.
Yeah.
If you go right through, training, Jeff, he was just so superior. My job was easy with him because he was super natural or whatever. Mm. To every aspect that is needed, he more than had it covered. And, yeah, of course I was proud. And I go back and... We had Bill Morty said we can fight for the IBF title. We had 5 fights. Mm. And I said, Bill, turn it up. No one got a world title in you'd go 30 fights. So, yeah. Been being it for years and everything. Well, I said, Bill, no. I said, he's had five fights. Anyhow, he come back again. And I think it was the third time. I said, Bill, get me his last three fights on the tapes. You remember we had the tapes in them days? Yeah. Anyhow, he did. And when I seen him, I said, I think Jeff can beat this, right? Anyhow, we went that way. And I remember
Yagoki Shingaki,
they had a thing in the paper about Jeff fighting for the title, and they asked all the experts. Mm. One bloke said we'd win it, and that was Jimmy Carruthers. He said to me, he said, Johnny, you've got a good, he's special, that bloke. Now, there was our greatest.
Anyway, Rusty, I want to go back to what you said before. My belts don't really represent what it's when your peers give you respect, like you were talking about what Clay just said about me, what Carlos Rada. If you hear the Chavez or Roberto Duran when they've watched my fight, so Chavez, when I got my said, I was at the fight, you beat Nelson, you know, convincingly. But I mean, when it comes from your peers, that's when you know you made it. Yeah. If you're a good rugby league player and the old rugby league players talk about you, they mix you, then you made it. When I get off the plane, go to Vegas, and there's a convention or something on, and all those fighters around, they're all around me, like Holyfield, Tyson, all those guys, then you know you're made. I'm proud of what I've done. Yeah.
Man, that must be such a buzz. Yeah. Just this combination you have. You guys have a strain, iconic relationship, friend, team. You were just the most iconic team. I don't know anyone who's achieved more as a team than you, like, together.
Again, like I said, when I think of people who are similar to Johnny, I think of the guys like the Wayne Bennetts, the Bellamy's, who can keep these guys. And it's different. Like Johnny, I was an individual. They're doing with the team. But individually, for him to keep me where he kept me and to do what he done was a pretty amazing job, because I know who I was.
Was there ever a time that he had to pull you up and say, mate?
Oh, no. I'll never forget the first time I won the world title and I walked in the gym door after it, and I'd been out doing what most world champions celebrate with. And he said to me, son, see that door you just walked in? He said, turn around and get the fuck out. I walked out, I'm crying my eyes, I'm fucking crying. But he just reminded me, he said that I changed. And look, like I said, fame and fortune changes everybody. All of a sudden I'm going place, I'm getting everything for nothing, doing whatever I wanted to do, Russ, which, like I said, again, I'm not proud of today, but that was part and parcel of what came with you being world champion. He reminded me, he's reminded me on many occasions.
There's a side with Jeff. We had the gym full of kids. Everybody in that gym had new Reebok shoes on.
I remember he was sponsored by Reebok.
He'd done that out of his own money, his sponsor money. He continuously and consistently looked after all the kids say to me, oh, I love Jeff, how he used to give us this and give us that. I remember once we were going to, I think it was for Cerebral Palsy Day over at Manly.
We had
the bus, we're driving there, and he said, pull up here. And I said, what are you doing? He said, just pull up. And the next thing, he come out with boxes and boxes of toys, and we went to the thing, and he donated all. Mate, Dave. He's a giver. And as I say.
And so are you, Johnny, you've got legendary stories here.
And listen, given, again, let me interrupt, I love it. Given's not about giving toys, but given time and given mental help to people who need it. And that's Johnny. Yeah. We're all there. Of course, like I said, I knew what the kids would love that day, so I done that. Yeah, but what Johnny's given, you can't put a price on. There's no money can buy what somebody gives you. And when they can give you something mentally and make you a better person, but you can't put a price on that.
Yeah, I agree. The gift of time is the best gift of ever, isn't it? 100%. And knowledge.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And he just share it freely. That's what makes Johnny so special. Like, I remember Johnny coming in with Costa. We're at the Long Bay when we're there. You brought Costa. You guys have done heaps of jail. I mean, you're going out to Park Lee when Wade Brothers were there.
We went everywhere.
Darren Goldman, boys are telling me.
You look at some of the people like Alan Jones, what a beautiful man. He wrote one of the parts of my book, one of the good parts. He wrote his little part. And I think of Alan Jones, when he speaks about you, he makes you believe if he tells you you can fly, you're going to go up the top of the window, you're going to jump out and fly. Mark Burris is the same. Yeah. I've got this relationship with Mark at the moment since I've done Celebrity Apprentice. Just amazing people. I'm still my great friend, David Ginge. All those guys have played little parts in my life and done things for me. But, yeah, I feel that all that I give back to them is all stems from what Johnny taught me. Yeah,
you would never get in people's lives without the humility of his humility.
I said, they all love me for the person I am. And the person I am is, like I said, is because of this guy.
I had a moment the other week. I went to a TikTok influencers party, right? And went to this big fucking penthouse down at the pier. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck am I doing here? And it's that moment, because that's that Mount Drill boy in me, doubting myself, going, fuck, what am I doing here? And then this other voice coming to my head, which I picked up, like listening to you guys, and it's, I'm meant to be here. I'm meant to be here right now. Yeah. That's where I'm meant to be. And I picked that up of listening to you guys.
So I'm gonna just give this. Let's leave on this number. I'm gonna give this last story about how much that Johnny changed my life, friend. So I'm now training Mike Tyson.
Wow.
In Las Vegas, we're in LA. I'm there with a couple of people. One of them was a billionaire that was with Mike and I, and we're at the UFC. We're all getting ready. We're all just about to go to this man's massive house down the beach at Malibu. The limo comes. Of course, Mike flicks me in their limo. So there's me, Mike, this very wealthy man, and a few other people. And we're in this car. We're just going down the expressway. And I told on the phone, Sue just said where I was going, this big party. Everybody's going to be there. Mariah, Pamela Anderson, every person was anybody's going to be at this party. Driving down the expressway, and they all started to smoke weed. I'm thinking, it's killing me. So I'm putting the window down. All of a sudden, they get some cocaine out. I made them stop the car. I got a taxi, went back to my hotel and stayed on my own. I just didn't want.
That's a good message.
I was just going to have a drink. And alcohol's no different, but it's legal. What I'm just saying. It's just me. I didn't want to be around that.
That's what makes you a champion.
I just didn't want to be around. And I mean, I've been around this guy. The only thing that we ever, like I said, we'd have a stout and coke together, and we'd sit down. And I'll never forget the beautiful times I had when Johnny had his beautiful house, and I had a house on the Central Coast, sitting there with those beautiful people that we met, the McInerneys, and it was crazy. I've had the most amazing life.
You had an amazing.
Thanks to the most amazing man.
Thank you guys for being a part of it. You know what I mean? Just to people as a young fella looking up to you, just watching these fights. And I mean, I'll tell you a story. You're fighting. I'm trying to think it was, but I was at Cabravale Diggers Club, and you're fighting someone, and a few of the people Smart Packeroon. And a few of them were going for him. Me and this bloke out here that's with me today turned on them all. And we got charged with about 8 assault charges because they were going for Smart Packeroon. And we were just pissed off that they weren't going for the Aussie.
But he was another dangerous
great
opponent.
Fighter, great fighter, yeah.
And that was a wonderful performance, that one.
Again, let's get back to the greatest performance ever, is our performance, is being able to try to help change people's lives. That's the performance that we need to talk about. What I've done is all beautiful and past and history, but what you continue to do to help people, Johnny, like you do every day, you're training people, helping people, and talking to people, because I know they all love you, and we're blessed to have you on. The longer that you're on the earth, the better this earth will be. I love you, Johnny Lewis.
Yeah.
I can only say that he lifted me up in my life too, very much.
What a blessing. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Ross, pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, Russell.